When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply at LifeMD.com. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
If you've struggled for years to lose weight and have given up hope, did you know you can now access GLP-1 prescription medications through LifeMD? LifeMD is now offering eligible patients online access to GLP-1s, the breakthrough prescription medication that can help you lose body fat and weight. Listen to what people are saying.
You just take your shot. It doesn't feel like you're on a diet. What I wasn't expecting it to do was to shut off the food noise. This was life-altering, and if I can do it, I feel like anybody can do it.
And here's the best part. Your insurance may cover 100% of the cost of your medication. So go to TryLifeMD.com to have your eligibility checked right now. Get started today at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.
Hello, podcast listener. My voice still kind of sounds terrible, but thanks for being here. Had vocal cord surgery just over a week ago and slowly getting better. It doesn't hurt. My doctor says it's fine to talk. The only barrier to content is whether or not you'll listen. That said, I did a crossover pod with Larry Kruger today, and I'm going to play that for you now in the feed. Before I do, just real quick, want to mention, go to the Apple Podcast page for the podcast and leave a review. That's how you're going to get in the mailbag, and I appreciate it. Go 5 stars, leave a question in the review, any question at all, and that'll be part of an upcoming mailbag. Now, here I am talking to Larry Kruger.
Yeah, guy, you don't sound quite the same, but we know you're on the mend. Tell us your condition.
My condition is I had a RFK Jr. transplant. I was like, make me sound like
I want to run for president.
Make me sound like Trent Baalke. Right. Let's see, a week ago Friday, so like almost a week and a half ago, I had a vocal cord procedure. Some would call it a surgery. There was a surgeon to laser a bump off of one of my vocal cords that had been bothering me for like a year when I would do games, especially like when I would try to project my voice. So this is just the normal rehabilitation. When I texted you yesterday about doing a show, I said, if you can stand this voice for an hour, we can do a show. So there's no harm in me talking. I don't need to go lay down. I'm not doing damage to my voice by talking. So I just sound like this, you know.
It's not laryngitis. It's not something. You're not sipping or are you sipping on tea? I mean, what is the rehab method? Or is it just, hey, you know what? Just hang out. It'll come back.
Yeah. Just do your thing. Don't push it, but you know, I'm not screaming and yelling. I went to Springsteen on Sunday. I didn't scream and yell. You know, I've got a vocal coach that I'm going to start seeing. She's going to make sure they think it happened because my vocal cords hit in the wrong place because of the way I talk. I've been doing some vocal exercise. I did some warm ups today. I warmed up to get to this today, Larry.
How was the warm up? Sprints? Any heavy lifting?
Yep. A lot of push ups.
Well, we'll take you in any form, dude, because, of course, your content is phenomenal, and we always love rapping with you. We'll get into a bunch of Niner stuff today. And, you know, it's here we are. It's the 2nd of April. We're inside the draft window. The draft is literally 3 weeks away, and the 49ers, for the first time in a couple of years, have a number one pick because they did not trade this one for Trey Lance. So, surprise, surprise, the Niners are due to pick at 31. And the big story surrounding the 49ers is a story that people, I don't know about you, but I'm tired of. I'm sure most people are tired of. And that is the future of Brandon Ayuk and what's going to happen to Ayuk. You know, it's funny. You get into the season, well, there's a million stories, right? You know, you go to to down to Santa Clara. You talk to player A, you ask him five or six questions. There might be a story or two out of that. I go down there, do the same damn thing. There may be a story or two out of that. Then there's the stories that we see on the practice field. And it's like, you look up and you're like, hey, there's like 15, 20 stories in the off season. It's usually not the way it goes. last year at this time, there were a lot of people going, Krug, will you stop saying that Trey Lance is going to be traded? He is our guy long term. He is not going to be traded. Shut up about you and your trades. And sure enough, he was traded. Unfortunately, it didn't happen until August. So that was still four more months of this. But this offseason, the kind of the story that won't die is this Brandon Ayuk. Will he, won't he? Do they want him? Do they not? Are they going to trade him? Are they going to trade Debo? You know, they're working out guys that are supposed to go in the middle of the first round, but they don't have a middle of the first round pick. So that makes you think that maybe he will get dealt. Then you have people saying, you know what? They're really Mike Garofalo from the NFL Network. They're very far apart in their two offers. And then the next day you've got Lynch. Hey, you know, we really want this guy and this and that. Before we get into some Ayuk stuff, where do you actually think this is? I mean, it's very difficult to separate the reports from fact. Do you think he's a Niner, always going to be a Niner, and, you know, Shanahan and Lynch are absolutely in love and they'll do whatever it takes? Do you think they've got a price and a cutoff point where they're like, if this gets beyond this, we're trading this guy? Or do you think that the master plan is to trade this guy? I mean, if you told me the master plan was to trade Ayuk for a mid first round pick, take a tackle and then take a receiver at 31 in this draft, I could make an argument for some damn good receivers at 31. What do you think the master plan is with Ayuk, if you had to guess?
Well, I think the master plan is for him to be Brock Purdy's catching partner for the next 7 years. I mean, I think that is their ideal situation, because I think when you look at his age, you look at all their expensive players, which if he stays, he'll become one. He is the one that fits on Brock's timeline the best, right? He fits right. Better than Kittle and McCaffrey and Debo. Without, like, it's not even close. He's on the same timeline as Juwan Jennings from like a when he was drafted standpoint. He's young. When you pay Brandon Ayuk, you're paying for his prime, Larry. You're not paying for past performance. And I think I think in some way they fear the unlikely, which would be somebody offering them a pick that they couldn't refuse, right? Somebody doing something illogical, like offering a mid-first round pick for Brandon Ayuk, which doesn't make sense to do that. You can get the third, fourth best receiver with a mid-round pick in the first round this year. So somebody shouldn't do that. Like, it doesn't pencil. But if somebody did that, I mean, for what's best for the organization, I think they'd feel like, God, this is such great value, even though they know you're not getting Brandon Ayuk's equivalent right now, maybe in 3 years, maybe in 2 years, but in all likelihood, not right now.
Right.
But I think the most likely outcome is he's playing, and I've said this for a while, Larry, that he's playing this year on the fifth year option. And I think the conversation we're having about him now is like a more real conversation next year as it relates to Debo.
So you think Debo may get moved next year is what you're thinking? Because, I mean, if you ask me, and I've been talking about this the last couple weeks or last couple days, I think Ayuk's coming back. I think they are going to draft a receiver somewhere in their first two or three picks. I would not be surprised if the Niners drafted a receiver either in the first or second round. I could see it. And then maybe a year from now, trading Debo Samuel, if that receiver comes of age a little bit, for maybe something that's not kind of paltry in return, you know, maybe like a fourth round pick, maybe a fifth round pick or something like that next year to some team that's not one of your arch rivals in either conference. That's kind of what I see as yeah. far as wide receiver. I can't imagine. I love Xavier Leggett yeah. or Leggett from South Carolina. I see a lot of AJ Brown in him. I was watching Path to the Draft last night, and sure enough, they made that comparison. And it's an easy comparison to make, right? They both played in the SEC. They're both big and strong and fast and physical. I can see that. I could see Malachi Corley being compared to a Debo Samuel out of Western Kentucky. I can see those comparisons, but it's such a projection. I mean, NFL wide receivers, I mean, Jerry, the greatest receiver of all time, wasn't great as a rookie. You know, he was far better as a second year player. So for whatever reason, and we could probably talk to Shanahan or some wide receiver coach about the intricacies of the position, but for some reason, wide receiver is like a, almost like a red shirt position where you can draft a guy. And for every Randy Moss, there's like 100 guys who just can't do anything that rookie year. And then come out in that second year and they're like, hey, wow, look at this guy. This guy's ready to roll. He knows the offense. He's quick in and out of the breaks. He's, you know, he's so refined. And, you know, it's so I don't know that if you're a team in a Super Bowl window that it makes sense to trade a veteran wide receiver who's cooking, who's an all pro, even if you get your handpicked receiver in the draft. I just don't know if it makes sense.
Yeah, well, I don't think you're not getting a top three receiver, even with an Ayuk trade. It does not make sense for this year. Maybe it makes sense for 6 years from now, but you're really replacing the guy that, you know, like replacing Ayuk with another receiver right now, you're replacing the wrong guy. You're replacing the younger, cheaper guy.
Right.
It makes more sense to replace Debo if you're going to replace anybody right now. And when you know, the year to replace Debo is next year because his dead cap hit comes down precipitously. So like that to me is the window. Next year is the window. And you know, the beauty with Ayuk, like he's still showing up. He's still working out. He still makes $14 million this year. Like it's a significant increase in salary for him this year. So it's not like he's playing on a $2 million contract. So, you know, like what that means is he can't afford to wait for next year's contract. He can't, you know. Now, as for the receiver part of it, like the draft part of it, I mean, they're probably going to draft one, to your point. Like, I went back and looked at all their seven drafts. This will be their eighth. This will be Kyle and John's eighth draft, okay? In the previous seven drafts, last year was the first year in which they didn't take some combination of multiple receivers and running backs. They've done receiver and running back, or receiver and receiver, or running back and running back every year until last year. Last year, they drafted Ronnie Bell. The year before, it was Ty Davis, Price, and Danny Gray. The year before, it was Trey Sermon and Elijah Mitchell. The year before, Ayuk and Jennings. 19, it was Debo and Jalen Hurd. 18, it was Pettis and Richie James. 17, it was Joe Williams and Trent Taylor. So they've taken nine receivers, four running backs, and almost every year they take some combination of multiples of that position. So they're doing it, Larry. Like they're taking a receiver and a running back, or they're taking two receivers, or they're like, that's going to happen in this year's draft. It happens almost every year for them.
It really shows too how difficult it is to handicap those two positions at its core, because those guys the Niners have swung and missed. And we'll look at the Niners draft history under Lynch and Shanahan later on in this stream. All right. So I entitled the stream, "Will the 49ers draft their next star wide receiver in this upcoming draft?" And I don't know. I mean, I think this is a really intriguing draft for star wide receivers. I mean, obviously Harrison at the top, Malik Nabers, Adunze, I'm not a huge fan of Brian Thomas. I'm not a big fan of Troy Franklin either. I'm not a big fan of Ladd McConkey. He scored two touchdowns all year. Then there's Adonai Mitchell. There's the burner, Xavier Worthy, Keon Coleman, Roman Wilson, Xavier Leggett or Leggett, Ricky Pearsall, Malachi Corley, Devontae Walker. I mean, this is a really loaded group. Rice's kid, Jalen McMillan, Javon Baker from Central Florida, who's really good.
Ooh, I like him.
McCaffrey, you know, his brother from Rice, had a phenomenal year. And then even down the list, I think there's some guys. Marcus Rosemy, Jack Saint from Georgia, I think's very underrated player. Isaiah Williams from Illinois, very underrated player. Bub Means from Pittsburgh can really run at 6'2", 215 pounds. There's some guys who can really, really run too in this thing. If you go deep down the list, Tyler Harrell from Miami is an absolute blazer at 6 feet, 210 pounds or so. There's a bunch of receivers. And then we didn't even talk about the slot receivers. I mean, then there's a whole group of guys who operate out of the slot. I mean, Malik Washington from Virginia is amazing. A lot of people like Anthony Gould from Oregon State. And Aeneas Smith from A&M is a good player. I've watched him for years. Jaquan Burton from Florida Atlantic. What do you think, Guy? Is there a receiver that you think fits the Niners specifically, or is there a receiver that you like that you'd love to see them grab in this draft?
Well, I mean, I wish his name was something else, because it feels too easy, but I do like Brendan Rice a lot. I like Jacob Cowing. I don't know if you mention Jacob Cowing at Arizona?
No, from Arizona, yeah.
You know,
another good receiver.
I like Javon Baker from UCF, who you mentioned. Like, you know, they had a really explosive passing game with a kind of inaccurate quarterback. And they went through some quarterback issues at UCF this year. Their guy, John Rice Plumlee, got hurt and came back. And they had a really good offense. Like, they had two really good receivers. They had a good run game. It all fit together. He catches a lot. I haven't looked at, like, his catch percentages or anything, but from what I remember, he catches a lot of stuff just like in his vicinity. I think he's a good catch, a pass catcher. So, I mean, those are a few names, but, like, to me, that list can keep going, and it's just listening to you talk. Like, I think they're drafting multiple receivers in this draft, even though it feels kind of crazy to say, because you look and you go, well, they got Jennings. I'm kind of past the Danny Gray, Ronnie Bell's going to have to earn it back, right, kind of situation. So, like, to me, it feels like a draft where you can draft multiple receivers and guys who will, like, maybe one of them starts returning for you right away. The other, you know what I mean? Like, I think you can get some snaps, because when you look around the team, it's just where do you find snaps for somebody? Just go through the positions, right? Like, where are snaps available? Snaps are available at corner right now, right? There's snaps available at corner.
Maybe linebacker.
Maybe linebacker. There's kind of always snaps available if you can earn them on the defensive line for this team.
Yeah, no doubt.
We'll see what happens by, I guess the deadline is tomorrow, but there might be some snaps available at tight end, depending, right, on what happens with Brock Wright. And then offensive line, potentially, right? There's snaps available on the offensive line. There's not really a lot of snaps. If we went back and looked at how many snaps Ray played last year, would he have like 18 targets? I mean, maybe that's high. But those are, somebody has to get those targets. So there is a spot for somebody to come in, be a returner, get 20 targets, and then become maybe a bigger piece of the puzzle next year. So you can kind of soft red shirt if you're a receiver on the Niners.
So are you saying that any receiver the Niners draft has to have returnability, you think?
No.
I mean, like, this Brendan Rice, he's not a returner, right?
He kicked returned a little bit. Definitely Colorado, okay. He did. Yeah. He doesn't look like you're, but I think the return is different all of a sudden. Like, one of my early theories on the return, Larry, is do running backs make more sense as returners now?
Well, they're usually more durable, you know, but they run lower to the ground.
Like, now it's like a short area, find one hole and hit it.
Right.
Right. Like, I just wonder if I don't know, the XFL kick returns I've watched were pretty, they lacked creativity. Like, so my theory being, you need a running back who plays behind a shitty offensive line. Like, that's what your returner needs to be now. Cause you got like linebackers out there trying to block in small areas. Like, it's just a weird deal all of a sudden. And I wonder if running backs will thrive in the new NFL kickoff. So, but to answer your question, no, I don't. I mean, if you had to, you could put, I know people won't like it, you could put Christian back there. But you could put Ronnie Bell back there. Like, whatever. I'm not overly concerned about it, especially if you take two guys. Take your best pure receiver first, and then take a guy that's a little more of a Swiss Army knife second.
Let's hone in on Brendan Rice for just a second. What do you think of him as far as, You know, I mean, do you think the Niners would be a good spot for him? I mean, you know, there's obviously the comparison to Jerry, but to me, yeah, it's like Jerry is so his, you know, he's so in his own category that I don't really think anybody would draw any comparisons and say, well, is he as good as his dad? I mean, obviously he's not his dad. His dad, it's like comparing Pete Rose to Pete Rose Jr. or something. You know, it's like, come on. I mean, there's only one Jerry. But I like this kid, and there's several things about his game that I really, really like. One, he scored a touchdown on every 5.2 catches. And that's a great, you know, and if you watch him, like, he's not the explosive athlete that Jerry was, but he's not a bad athlete, and he's got good height. He's got good size. And then when you watch him, Brendan Rice, you see a guy who, it's like, you can see that football is important to him. You know what I mean? It's like the guy runs the routes and he does a lot of the things. His concentration, I felt, seemed like better than the typical college receiver. His all of his technique, as far as just, you know, his hand placement when he would turn around, his breaks in and out of the breaks. So he just seemed like a more refined receiver than your typical receiver. I mean, he just looked so much more refined. And obviously his father is the legendary Jerry Rice, who was awesome at Mississippi Valley State and great with the Niners and the greatest wide receiver of all time. But what do you think? What do you think? Is it better for Brendan Rice to be a Niner or to not be a Niner?
I don't think it matters, because I think he can handle it. Like, I've watched him a lot in his career going back to Colorado. He is not fazed by being Jerry's son. And at first you thought, well, maybe he's a Colorado. Then he goes to SC, where the light is brighter. It didn't change him at all. So I don't think it matters one bit to him if he's a Steeler or a Niner. I mean, maybe it matters to him, but I don't think it's going to affect him in any way. I think there's a lesson in the Danny Gray draft pick for the 49ers. And I think Brendan Rice is a great example of the opposite. I think one of the lessons for the Niners, and this applied to Trey as well, but more so from a receiver standpoint, Danny Gray, if you're a one-trick pony, if we're bringing you in to say, okay, you do one specific thing, you're fast. And Debo and Ayuk and Jennings, they're not fast like you. So we're going to put you in specific spots where it's a chance for the fast guy. It's going to be really hard to get on the field, because in order to really earn playing time and earn a snap, you have to be consistent. You have to be even across the board. You have to be a good route runner, a good pass catcher. You've got to be able to do everything, because these other guys, Ayuk and Debo, they do a little everything, especially Brandon, right? And so when you try to fit a piece in who just does one thing to a lineup of guys who can do multiple things, it's really awkward. It's difficult to find a spot for that player where you put them on the field three times a game, but then somebody else is open because they ran a good route, you know? And I think what Brendan Rice is the kind of guy who you can give him, I think, 7 to 15 snaps a game early. And you're not looking for him to do just one thing. Like, that's why Danny Gray can't get on the field, because you can't give him 15 snaps because he's only doing one thing, right? Like, to me, Brendan Rice is a little like what we saw from Chris Conley late in the year, right? What was Chris Conley? He was on the field and ready for whatever the moment required of him. And when the moment required him to run a route that he never won with Brock and catch the ball, he did it. And I think that's Brendan, because Brendan Rice can run every route. And because he's so mature as a football player, that I can put him out there for 10 to 15 snaps and he will run the right route 10 to 15 times, and twice the ball might come his way. So when you have specialty receivers, like Danny Gray needs to be on a team, or needed to be on a team, where he's like, they're bad, and he's like their number two guy, and he just gets to run and run and run and run and run. And four times a game, they hit him. And it's like, well, it doesn't matter that his routes weren't crisp or he dropped two balls. On the Niners, you have to run crisp routes and you can't drop the ball because you may not get another shot, right? And so that's the type of player they got to draft. They have to draft a player who can get on the field with consistency first. And then that will create production for that guy. And I think that's what Brendan Rice is. And I think that's, that to me is the lesson in Danny Gray.
Well, and you saw the latest on Danny Gray, right? With the whole.
Yes.
Yeah. So, you know, I mean, I don't know if Danny Gray's head's in the right spot. To me, just being in the locker room and being around him, it seems like he lacks confidence. And I don't know. I mean, I wonder about the durability of the kid. Seems like every hit he takes is, you know, it hurts him. He just seems like, yeah, I mean, I understand why Kyle wants him. And I've talked to Kyle about this before. Hey, the advantage of having the guy that can run off the top of the defense and stretch the field and create space. And that's what Danny's there for. But if you don't get on the field, you're not creating jack.
Yeah. You gotta be on the field for other stuff too. Right. That over the top throw, such a low percentage throw that if you can't do other stuff, then it's, you know,
what are you doing?
So Brendan Rice can do so many things that you can put him on the field in a normal situation and just expect that he'll be in the right place at the right time.
Two other receivers I want to talk about. One is this kid out of Virginia, Malik Washington, and Dumpster Fire Dan is in here twice. He says, give me Malik Washington for value. And then he came back with, I love Malik Washington. I'd take him in the third or fourth round or over most of these guys. Dumpster Fire Dan and I are in lockstep on this one. We're both big fans of Malik Washington. I love this kid. He's a grad student. He's only a 5'8", 194-pound receiver. Started at Northwestern, transferred to UVA. Grad student. He's originally from Lawrenceville, Georgia. And he was one of the 10 semifinalists for the Biletnikoff Award. This guy just, all he does is go out there and catch and catch and catch. He's also first team academic All-American. So he's a smart guy. He was voted a team captain. So he's somewhat of a leader. This guy was great in high school. He was great at Northwestern. He's great at Virginia. He was a three-time scholar athlete in high school. So, I mean, he's that kind of a guy. He lettered four times in track, claimed a state title and a national championship in 2017 in the 4x100 meter relay, honor roll student pursuing a master's degree in higher education. I mean, this guy's, and then if you watch him, and you saw this year for Virginia. Virginia was not a good team this year, but man, this guy was everywhere. I mean, his bad game was like 9 catches for 91 yards and a touchdown. I mean, this guy had huge stats all year long. Have you seen Malik Washington at all from Virginia? And I guess more importantly, can a 5'8" receiver, you know, succeed in the NFL to the point where you would take him on day two?
To me, you've got a better shot in a Kyle Shanahan. You just have a better shot with coaches who know how to get you into space. I don't know. How did they use him, Larry? Like, was he running end arounds?
Well, he did a little bit of everything. I mean, literally they ran him on short crossers across the middle of the field. They ran him on hitches. They ran him on downfield routes. He's quick. He's a little bit more powerful than you think. He kind of has a Tyreek Hill vibe without that explosive speed. He's not the speedster that Tyreek is, but he's got the same body type. He's thick. He's powerful. He's explosive in short areas.
I mean, I'm just interested in good player. You think he's a second or third round pick at 5'8"?
I think he's a late third, probably early fourth round pick. I mean, I would like
to return.
He can return. Yeah. He can do some returning. I just think, yeah, he's one of those guys that he's just very productive, very, very mature. Runs the routes correctly. Really good at using your movement against you. He's good. Joey Nichols says he's nowhere close to Tyreek, but he's a good player. No, he's not Tyreek, but he's built like Tyreek. He's got the Tyreek exact. I mean, if you want to say what's he built like, he's exactly Tyreek, but he doesn't have that kind of ridiculous speed. He's more of a moderate speed guy, but he's very quick in a short area, and he's incredibly productive. And it's not like the guy played for, you know, some tiny little Division III thing. He played in the ACC, and he did it against some top-tier guys. I really like him quite a bit. The other guy I wanted to ask you about was McCaffrey's brother. I mean, what do you think of McCaffrey's brother? 2 years ago, he's a quarterback. Last year, he was a receiver for the first time, and he had a bust-out year. He ran a 4.47. He's got pretty good size. When you watch him, though, there's something kind of underwhelming about his movement. It's like, is he really faster than Christian? I don't know. I mean, he was for the stopwatch, but I don't know if he actually is as field fast as Christian. To me, he looked good, but not great. He looked, you know, dependable, but not special. Have you looked at McCaffrey's brother at all?
Yeah. And I've watched all the McCaffreys, as most of us have. I love the idea of converted quarterbacks at safety, at receiver, at linebacker. Sometimes you get a linebacker that's a converted quarterback, but you often get them at safety. And I really like him at receiver, just generally speaking. I'm intrigued by him. He does not look faster than Christian to me, but Christian also looks like he has, you know, taken a lot of track instruction in his running, right? When you watch Christian run, you see a person who appears to have worked on their technique in a way that's great. And he looked like this back in college too. Christian ran from a form standpoint this way back in college. And it's efficient. Now, Christian doesn't really run away, right, when it comes to like runaway touchdowns, unless there's a significant gap. He did in college, not as much in the NFL with the Niners. I'm intrigued by him, but, you know, to me, like, this would be a low, this would have, to, I wouldn't take him on, you know, sixth round. I mean, I don't know where he's, I haven't looked lately where he's projected, but that feels about right, doesn't it? Seventh round, undrafted.
Are you talking about Luke?
Yeah.
They're saying he might come up. There's a lot of teams that like him, and he may come off the board end of the third or beginning of the fourth.
That seems
like an overdraft.
Doesn't that seem unlikely to you?
When I first saw him, I thought, you know what? This guy's like a sixth round pick. And I usually go with my first instincts. And now I've watched him a little bit, and I think, yeah, maybe a late fifth. But I've heard talk that he's very popular among NFL personnel people, and that he may come off the board earlier. To me, I would say the fifth round is the sweet spot there. The other question, the guy I think
which,
is kind of
which, by the way, Larry, if they draft him the fifth round, that might make him the second receiver they take. So if that's the case, that's fine to me.
Yeah. Yeah.
Prize Picks is America's number one fantasy sports app because it's the easiest and most exciting way to get in on the action. While you watch your favorite players in sports, you just pick more or less on two or more player stats, and then the fun is on. Prize Picks has something for every sports fan, from basketball to hockey to League of Legends and everything in between. It's really simple to play. You make your picks, submit an entry in less than 60 seconds. I'll do it at halftime of a basketball game. And I also have some season-long more or less picks on MLB homers. You may remember, I've got less on Ohtani homers this year. We'll see. And at halftime of your next NBA blowout game, just jump on and go, Steph Curry more than 11 points in the second half. It'll change the game for you. Download the Prize Picks app and use the code HAM50 for a first deposit match of up to $100. That's HAM50 for a first deposit match of up to $100. Prize Picks, pick more, pick less. It's that easy.
ButcherBox.com/ham and another special deal. Free for a year. You get salmon, chicken breast, or steak tips in every order for a year, plus an additional $20 off right now at ButcherBox.com/ham. Been telling you about it for years. Been eating it 4 years on a regular basis. Easily find high quality meat and seafood you can trust. 100% grass-fed beef, free-range organic chicken, pork raised crate-free and wild-caught seafood. Always be prepared with meat in the freezer when you get butcherbox.com/ham delivered right to your doorstep with free shipping. ButcherBox is offering you free for a year plus an additional $20 off either salmon, chicken breast, or steak tips in every order for free. Sign up today at butcherbox.com/ham and use the code ham to choose your free offer for a year plus get $20 off your first order.
What's up, everybody? It's your old friend, John Middlecoff. I'm here to tell you about our friends at Game Time. Here's what I need you to do. Go to your smartphone, download a little app called Game Time. Baseball season's in full swing. Oracle Park. Been there a million times. Never doesn't live up to the hype. Go get yourself some garlic fries, a brewski, maybe some ice cream. They have very good Ghirardelli ice cream there. And when you do that, promo code HAM. So download the Game Time app, your first pair of tickets, promo code HAM, H-A-M, save $20. The A's, only going to be in the Bay Area for the rest of this season. You probably can basically go for free. Just buy a pair of tickets to any baseball game. They also have comedy shows if you want to check one of those out, or concerts. Game Time app, promo code HAM, save yourself $20. We don't even need a thank you. Just hammer that promo code.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice-cold reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Medela is your reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
What does innovation sound like? It sounds like the luxury of being in the moment with your customer, client, or patient. It sounds like having the right information right when you need it. It sounds like being at your best for your customers and your business. Thanks to Hyland's intelligent content solutions that improve digital processes, innovators everywhere are able to do their thing better, whatever that thing is. Now, who doesn't like the sound of that? Hyland, for innovators everywhere. Visit Hyland.com.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
And then there's the question of how many receivers can you possibly have on your roster? You have Debo and Ayuk and JJ. You have Ronnie Bell. You have, you know, they have Tate Martin. They have Danny Gray. I mean, are they, you know, are these guys, are, you know, here's the other question I would say too, is that the receiver market, and this is the thing. I mean, it's not really about Ayuk because Ayuk's an all pro. The best guys get paid. I mean, like Calvin Ridley, you know, whatever, $92 million and, you know, $50 million guaranteed. Yeah, you know, it's like there's money out there for great receivers. But I'm looking at the receiver free agent pool right now, just the receivers. These are the receivers. Now, it's granted, it's March or it's April 2nd. So free agency has come and gone for the most part. These are the receivers that are still on the market. And this is a pretty intriguing group of receivers. Hunter Renfrow, Allen Robinson, OBJ, Michael Gallup, Tyler Boyd, Michael Thomas, MVS, Marquez Valdez-Scantling, Kendrick Bourne, DJ Chark, Jamal Agnew, Mecole Hardman, who was traded last year to Kansas City, Jakeem Grant, who might not be a bad add as a return guy, LaVisca Chenault, who I've always liked. For whatever reason, hasn't happened for him, but he's out there. Marquise Goodwin, Chase Claypool, who they're saying may go to Canada. I've always liked Claypool. I don't know what the hell happened with that guy.
Apparently you don't hang out with him.
I don't hang out with him. But he had a nice rookie year, and then he just kind of evaporated. And then a couple other guys. I mean, Trent Taylor, Laquon Treadwell. Those guys are just kind of guys. Trey Nixon's not bad, who was with New England. He's 26. But I mean, that's a decent group of wide receivers that you could just sign off the street today if you didn't want to draft one.
But I think they want to draft one. They do it every year.
Yeah.
They do it every year. I mean, they've drafted 9 receivers in 7 drafts. So they want to draft a receiver, Larry. They like doing it. Now they might do it in the 7th round, right? They did. Ronnie Bell was in the 7th. Juwan Jennings was in the 7th. They actually have a pretty good eye for 7th round receivers. So that might be where they do it. That might be the second guy they take. I think they're taking a guy earlier than that, though. But I would not be in a rush on any of those guys you named, because you are paying for 15 catches to 25 catches, right? That's what you're paying for.
Or it's almost like an insurance policy. Unless you had a guy.
I don't want to pay for
an insurance policy. You thought was a return man. Like Jakeem Grant is an interesting name. He's not a great player, but Jakeem Grant is a very good returner. And if you wanted to have a lightning quick return man, I don't know about his health, but if he was healthy, I'd be interested in him.
What are these returns going to look like? I would imagine they're studying the XFL, but
yeah, I mean, I hope they're studying.
You watched them. Like these returns were a mess from a blocking standpoint. Well, just nothing. Nobody, there's zero creativity. And I don't know if it's because the coaches don't have it, or they didn't have enough time for it, or you just can't do it. But like rarely did you see from I just watched somebody put together like clips of all these. It's like occasionally you'd see like a pull block, right? But mostly it's like dudes blocking one-on-one, and it's just
chaos.
Yeah, chaos. So I don't exactly know what it is we're going to get here. Unless you feel like you know, and maybe some of these guys do feel like they know. And I would imagine like they're getting on the phone with guys who coach in the XFL to ask them. I don't know. I wouldn't spend too much money on a return guy before I even know exactly what kind of return guy I need.
It's funny. I was just scouring the internet before the show, and there was an article out by somebody named Chris Partee from Yardbarker, 4 potential landing spots for Brandon Ayuk. It's like these, they list the Steelers, the Commanders, the Texans, and the Jaguars as potential homes for Brandon Ayuk. The one thing I would say about kind of, dovetailing our previous thought, I could see if you're in the market for Brandon Ayuk or any veteran wide receiver, it's probably because you've got job security issues, and I say that because it just seems like you could draft the best receiver in the game. You could in the draft, and yet you may have to wait 3 years. Where if you get Brandon Ayuk in a trade, you're getting a great player right away. Now you're getting a great player who doesn't know your system, but you're getting a great player. I just think of like Jacksonville and Pittsburgh as, Trent Baalke may be fired if they don't go to the playoffs this year. I don't know. Maybe he's willing to make a trade because of that. Mike Tomlin, I think, has got to win in Pittsburgh. I know he's been a winner, but he hasn't won in the playoffs in 5 years. That they're interested is not a shocker to me. So it's when I see these teams, Houston, I don't know. I mean, D'Amico's going to be there a while. Obviously, Washington's a brand new regime. They're not going anywhere anytime soon. But I would say the real attraction of an Ayuk is that you're getting a guy this year who can play.
Yeah, I heard, I don't know if you heard Doug Peterson at the league meetings, the owners meet, whatever, the league meetings the other day, I heard an interview that he did where he's like, you know, yeah, the next step for Trevor Lawrence is just like in the big moments to make the right plays. I was like, God, that's kind of a guy. If that's the question you have about him, that's kind of a major question to have about this guy. They've invested in receiver for him. I agree with you. I mean, like the team that always quote unquote made the most sense, even though it makes no sense, was the Jets. Like, would they do something desperate at 10, right? Now, the idea that someone's going to offer you the 10th pick for Brandon Ayuk feels pretty insane. But that's the point. It's like the Niners would have to get their socks blown off, and somebody would have to be a little irrational to offer them a pick that feels that special, right? Like that Jags thing. You remember that Jags rumor, whatever the hell that was, a few weeks ago? And it was like the 17th pick and Zay Jones. The reason whoever came up with that idea included Zay Jones wasn't because the Niners have like some desire for Zay Jones. It was because the Jags were saying, save us $6 million and take Zay, or whatever the number was, take Zay Jones if you're getting the 17th pick, right? That's my theory on that whole thing. Zay Jones
it seemed really random.
But like my point is just that 17 and Zay Jones, like you don't, if you offer 17 for Brandon Ayuk, tell me if you agree with this, you don't have to add more. Like 17 is a hell of an offer for Brandon Ayuk, right?
Yeah, I mean, personally,
that is a more than fair offer for Brandon Ayuk. You don't have to add players.
I hear you, but at the same time, there's a bust rate.
Of course, I wouldn't take it. I'm just saying, based on what receivers get traded for, Larry.
Yeah.
Right. 17 is a very fair offer based on what the market is.
Yeah. I just, you know, my whole thing is it's kind of like the Buckner with the Kinlaw thing. It's like, you're getting Buckner. You know what Buckner is. You know, the Niners are getting the pick and they took Kinlaw with it. Well, they don't know. And there's a bust rate, or there's a, you know, there's a rate where, you know, somebody says, DR says, Larry thinks Ayuk is worth a top five pick. No, I don't. I'm just saying I personally would want a 2-for-1 in any situation. When I'm trying a vet, trading a veteran player that's producing and good, and you're giving me a draft pick, I want 2 draft picks. Why? Because there's a bust rate. There's a miss rate on the draft picks. Yes, you could get Brandon Ayuk at 17, or you could miss. So it's like, and I'm trading you a sure thing. So all I'm saying is I would like a 2-for-1. I would like at least 2 picks for 2 bites of the apple if I'm giving you a guaranteed thing. Now, it doesn't have to be 2 high picks. It could be 1 high pick, 1 low pick, but I just want 2 picks. That's just me.
Yeah. I mean, of course, but Larry, if I'm offering you 17, I am not offering you another pick. Like, that's a hell of a value.
Right. But if you're offering me 17 for an established receiver, odds are you need that established receiver to produce for you next year for a reason. Right. And there's only so many of them. So to say, hey, I'll take your 7th round pick or 6th round pick in addition, may not be a deal breaker, but that's what I would ask for.
Yeah,
I would want a 17 and like a late day 3 pick, just so I could have one more chance to find a replacement. You know, I mean, that's really what it is. You're trying to find a replacement.
And I wouldn't trade him for 17. Understand. I agree with you, but I just, when you look at like Tyree, when you look at these trades, history says that Brad Ayuk is not going to get you the 13th pick in the draft. You know,
No, a lot of times people would say, hey, if you got a late first, that would be good. All right, let's talk about another position I want to get your thoughts on, safety. Where are you with the 49ers at safety? I mean, they've got Talanoa Hufanga and they've got Jair Brown, but Hufanga's coming off an injury, and he was injured a ton in college. And Jair Brown is a second year player. They're probably both better at strong safety than free safety, but where are you with their safeties? I mean, they've been talking to Julian Blackman. You know, there's talk that John Lynch may bring back Tayshaun Gibson, who I'm not a huge fan of, just because Gibson to me will catch interceptions but he's not great against the run, and he's not great against the pass. And so I don't love him. But I'm looking at that safety spot, and I'm thinking, Fungus hurt. We don't know about Brown exactly. And then it's a very physical position. The rest of your guys, George Odom's a special teamer. The other two guys are more just kind of stopgap replacement level players, you know, practice squad guys. What do you think? Do the Niners need to sign a safety before camp starts? And, you know, do you have any, you know, thoughts on potentially what could be out there for them?
I mean, I do like Julian Blackman. Going back to college, right? He is like he's one of these prototypical Utah defensive backs. But I don't think, like, you're not drafting that spot with any expectation that you're going to get help right away, right, this year. So even though it's not ideal, I think some combination of Brown, Hufanga, and Gibson can get you through the year. It's not ideal. It's not the first option. But I think if you've got those three guys playing safety for you, you have professional NFL safeties. And you've got Mooney Ward. Maybe you're drafting a corner, right? Maybe you're not, but you got Mooney Ward, you got Lenore, you got an all-pro linebacker. Hopefully you got a better pass rush. And you just get through the year with a guy that's been a Pro Bowler and another guy that might be, but maybe he's not. It's kind of weird, really, Larry, right now, the situation they find themselves in, because it felt like at one point, you know, Hufanga was an all-pro. And I talked to my buddy Will Blackman a while back on the channel, and he's like, people do not understand how good this guy, like, this guy is all that. And then other people kind of think, like, yeah, he was an all pro, but is he really? He's not Ed Reed and all pro, right? And there feels like there's a redundancy with him and Brown's skill sets that makes you wonder if Jair Brown was actually here to replace Hufanga, not play alongside him, right? Like, they don't feel complimentary, really.
It's not Cam Chancellor and Earl Thomas.
But that said, Hufanga's a hell of a player. Jair Brown's a hell of an athlete. He's got a shot. So if you had to play the two of them together this year, I'd be into it. Like, I'd be okay with it, even though I don't think it exactly fits. But I'd be okay with it because I think they're both good players. You know what I mean? And I don't really know what your other options are. I guess if you go Julian Blackman, fine. And then maybe he and Brown replace Hufanga eventually. But maybe Talanoa comes back and has a great year. I mean, that's very possible, right? He had an injury that he should be able to bounce back from. And he never really was. It wasn't about his speed. It was about his brain, his anticipation. So he should come back from injury, I think, as a good player still. But that's where I'm at with them.
Looking at the safety free agents guy, I mean, Jamal Adams, Justin Simmons, Eddie Jackson, Quandre Diggs. I like Quandre Diggs quite a bit. Micah Hyde, Tracy Walker, Marcus May, Jayron Kearse, Adrian Phillips, Tayshawn Gibson. If you go further down the line, you got guys like, who else is interesting on this list? Well, Julian Blackman, of course. And you know, is there any safety on the Jayron Kearse is a kind of an interesting name. Is there any of those veteran safeties that you look at and say, because I'm not a big fan of Tayshawn Gibson. I just don't think Tayshawn Gibson plays tight coverage. And then I watch him as a run fit guy, and he just doesn't always take the right run fit. So it's like, okay, he can give up big plays against the run. He's not a great cover guy. So what does he give you? He gives you, like, if you overthrow a pass and it's just lofting in the middle of the field or gets tipped, he's got a great knack to pick it off. I think the guy's got like 36 or 37 career interceptions. But other than that, and I understand why on the tail end of Ward and Tart, they were attracted to high productive interceptors, but to me, you got to do something more than just be a high productive interceptor at safety. I think Gibson's one of the reasons the Niners weren't very good against the run.
Are you saying you don't want him as like safety three, or would you not want him? Like, that's how I think of him.
Well, I mean, I just think if he comes back, he's going to be safety two.
Okay, because Odom is safety three and your special teams.
Yeah, I mean, Odom's a special teamer. I don't think if they had to start Odom from scrimmage, I think they would be looking for somebody off the street.
What do you think of Hufanga and Brown together?
I mean, I like Hufanga, but Hufanga wasn't healthy in college and is proving not to be healthy in the pros. And I think he falls off tackles. My son did have a stat a couple weeks ago that was amazing, that the Niners were amazing against the run pre-Hufanga's injury. And then after the Hufanga injury, they dropped precipitously against the run. He's really good at attacking the mesh point. He's really smart, understanding when to play, you know, run or pass. I just see him as a liability in coverage and a guy who falls off blocks at the line of scrimmage.
He seems like even if you don't love him, a pretty good option given the position they're in right now.
Yeah.
I mean, he's good. Yeah. If he's healthy, but I don't think do you have much? I mean, I guess, you know, until you're proven healthy, you're unhealthy, but the timeline should line up pretty well for him to come back and be healthy. But I just wonder if they were kind of already planning to replace him.
Well, and if they do replace him, you know, this is a decent draft to replace him in. And this, I'm really glad we have you here because I know how much you watch the Pac-12. Many of the top safety guys are Pac-12 guys. Let me throw a few of them your way.
Give me the list.
You know, these are the Pac-12 safeties that are really, you know, I think viable for the Niners. There's Cole Bishop.
Yes, Utah. That's the guy.
There's Kalen,
number one.
You like Cole Bishop?
I love Cole Bishop.
There's Kalen Bullock from SC. There's Jaden Hicks from Wazoo. Really good player. There's Ketan Oladapo from Oregon State.
Yeah,
who's got kind of the bleached top. He kind of bleached the top of his hair. He is intriguing to me. There's Evan Williams from Oregon.
That's your scouting report. He bleaches the top of his hair.
That's why I remember him. Who else?
Who did you just say?
Evan Williams from Oregon.
Oh, Fresno State.
Patrick McMorris from Cal.
Who was a transfer from San Diego State?
Who else is not? Oh, here's a guy that I know the Niners have looked at. They've looked at the combo safety running back from Utah, Sione Vaki.
Yeah, Vaki, 2 years ago, he was a running back and got forced into action in the Rose Bowl to play corner and played okay. He's a good player. Last year they had some running back injuries and made him a running back like the week of a game, and I think he went for over 100 yards. So maybe he could return. I got to go back and look at his game log, but
he's interesting. And then I was telling you before the show that the guy that really stands out to me is Jamal Hill from Oregon, who 6 feet, 225. You know, is he a linebacker? Is he a safety? But man, you looked at that workout. I mean, the guy ran 4.4. He had a 40-inch vertical. He made one of the most amazing interceptions of the year. I probably think he's more of a linebacker than a safety, but there's no doubt I'd want to draft him. Jamal Hill. I mean, anybody go watch that guy. That guy's, he wore 19 for Oregon. He's just a monster. I mean, this guy's a big time hitter. He's really, really, really physical. He's fast, has some dominant traits and kind of plays with a swagger. Of those Pac-12 safeties, who do you like?
I love Paul Bishop.
Really?
Yeah.
Tell us what you love about Bishop.
Well, he's been a guy he kind of played right away for them. He's physical. He's fast. He is you know, I think to play safety for Kyle Whittingham requires a lot intellectually. They've done it before there where they've moved quarterbacks to safety just because they ask a lot. And he's a guy that was an instant impact on, keep in mind, on really good defenses, right? Like he showed up at Utah at a time when they had a bunch of star players, like first round picks and multiple levels of their defenses, cornerbacks, linebacker, pass rusher. And he played basically right away for them. I think he's from Peachtree City, Georgia, which is the golf cart capital of of the world, or at least of America. They've got like their whole town has like bike paths everywhere where people just drive their golf carts.
Sounds nice.
So I like him. Ketan Oladapo from Oregon State, I like. He's really just he's a physical presence. I'm looking at him listed at 6'1". He's a big dude. And again, like if you're drafting defensive players from Oregon State or Utah, what you know you're getting is physical players, tough-minded, smart physical players. So he fits in that category. Really, all of those guys you listed, Larry, for the most part, were pretty productive. I thought Patrick McMorris would come out of this year as like a top three round guy, and that didn't exactly happen. Evan Williams is a solid player, not uber fast, but again, like super smart, right? Playing for Dan Lanning. So like all those guys were really productive players. They played in a league that threw the ball a lot, but also had excellent running backs. The last year, the Pac-12 was highlighted as the year that, you know, Washington went to the playoff, went to the championship game. But I think one thing that really happened in the league was you had a bunch of really good quarterbacks and a bunch of really good running backs. So to play defense in the league required you to stop the run and stop the pass. So all these safeties, I think, come in having seen physical run games and dynamic pass games, good quarterbacks. So that's a list of really good safeties. Like, Vaki also intrigues me just because of the way he played last year. Like they just plugged him in a running back. He played a running back. So yeah, think about Lanning, Oregon State, Utah. USC is not known for its physicality on defense. So Kalen Bullock, but you know, several of the guys you listed came from really physical programs. And most of them had to tackle.
What do you think of this one? T Dubs says Vaki's better at running back.
Maybe that's why you draft him.
Yeah, I mean he
figured out.
He's a combo. There's no question he's a combo player. What is the Niners' primary need? If you said going into this draft people would say, oh, it's offensive tackle, but it's pretty obvious that Kyle Shanahan, you know, loves Trent Williams and really likes Colton McKivitz, and they're looking for more help, but doesn't sound like they're looking for a plug and play guy. And then defensive tackle, but they just signed a couple guys. Corner, but they're, you know, 6'7" deep there, and really, you know, I don't know how it's kind of debatable how premier the, or at least how primary I should say that position is. What about linebacker? What do you think? I mean, is linebacker the biggest need? I mean, they signed Devondre Campbell, but they're not going to have Dre Greenlaw. I'm looking at the mock draft simulator. At 31, they could be staring at Edgerrin Cooper, who's phenomenal from A&M, Peyton Wilson from NC State, who had, you know, he's the Biletnikoff Award winner this year, and he had a crazy workout. I mean, just an amazing workout, but there's injury concerns. I love Cedric Gray from North Carolina a ton. To me, he's a lock to be really good. Jeremiah Trotter from Clemson, very, very productive player. I mean, they may be staring at the best linebackers in the draft at 31. Do they dare draft one there? What do you think?
I think they should dare. I'm not saying they should do it, but I would be open to it. Like, I do think offensive line is a big need. I do think you can get a good offensive lineman at 31, but if you don't think he can plug and play this year, then it may not be worth doing. I did this yesterday on my show, Larry, but I'd like your reaction to it. In the last 25 drafts, going back to 1999, last 25 drafts, the last five picks of the first round is what I looked at. So the range that the Niners are in, right? Picks 28, 29, 30, 31, 30, 29, 30, 31, 32. Yeah, 28, 29, 30, 31, 32. 14 offensive linemen have been drafted in those spots in the last 25 drafts, 14 total. Three of them became all pros. Half of them became good players for their team. So it's 50-50 that you're getting a good offensive lineman in the last 25 years in that spot. Not great. Not great if you're looking for a plug-and-play guy.
This year, there's such a you know, the quality of offensive line play in the NFL has declined to such a point where I think that there may be teams reaching for offensive linemen in this draft. That may be even a bigger number this year of people kind of taking a swing at an offensive lineman. But it kind of speaks to the need and the difficulty in evaluating those players.
Yeah, but there's also difficulty in evaluating corners in this area, because I do think that's a need. Like you said, there's a lot of guys, but there's a lot of guys that you're comfortable with coming off the bench, right? Unless you Yiadom. Do you like Isaac Yiadom? You and I haven't talked about him.
I do actually like him. I liked him before he went to the Saints, and then this year he had a really good year with the Saints. He was at Boston College. He's a long, tall corner. I think he'll compete for a spot. I like him as a – I think he's kind of an underrated free agent pickup, you know, since they got him at kind of a cheap price too.
I saw somebody in the chat said Demerson, Texas Tech, Dejuron Taylor Demerson.
Who I watched, I watched his film, and you know, all I would say was hyperactive tackler. I mean, that guy's just everywhere. He plays super fast. He's not the biggest. He's more of a grab and drag type tackler. He's not a thumper. He's not going to hit you and you're just down. But he's so freaking active, and he's so hyperactive. I mean, it's amazing how his energy is off the charts.
Yeah, he was the key to their defense. When he got hurt at the end of the year, it affected them on defense. Like he's a very good player. So that's another guy I like, but he's old, you know, like you might be drafting a fifth year senior in this draft. Like, I don't love that idea right early. But anyway, I say all that to say corner is like, I'd be open to a corner. If you said to me, the 49ers are, if you said Larry Kruger is reporting, the 49ers have decided they're going to go BPA at the end of the first round, best player available. What positions should be in their box where they would go BPA, right? Offensive line, linebacker, safety. I would put linebacker in the category of like who should be in their BPA box there. You know what I'm saying? Like
I'm in this mode now where forget BPA. I would want to target. I like the way that Brad Holmes and the Lions are doing it. I get the feeling when I'm watching their war room that they have a small board and that they're targeting certain players that they really, really love. And then they're going after those players. Brian Branch, Jahmyr Gibbs, the tight end from Iowa. All these guys feel like, you know, we don't just want a tight end and we'll take the best guy on the board and fill a need. We want that guy. And if we don't get that guy, then we don't even want this position. Maybe we'll go in a different direction.
So it's like BPA, but it's your BPA, right? Your board's BPA. I like that.
I'll give you an example. At corner, I love Max Melton from Rutgers, right? He's smart. He's tough. He's physical. He ran in the 4.3s. If you watch him against the run, he'll step up and start you. I mean, he's a big hitting corner who runs 4.3, who's smart. Comes from a football family. His brother plays for the Pack. You know, I mean, to me, Max Melton is a really, really good draft choice. Well, he's projected to go in like the 50s or 60s or maybe in the 40s, and the Niners pick at 31. Well, if you love him, take him. You know, that would be, you know, that's a guy like if that, you know, I don't want any corner. It's not like I just need to have a top corner. I want a, you know, I'd handpick like a half dozen guys that I love.
Cooper DeJean
is from Iowa. Is he a corner? Is he a safety? You know,
he's a returner.
He's a football player. You know, a lot of people really, really like him and think he's a real talent. Couple thoughts here before we finish up. We now have a pretty good track record of the Shanahan-Lynch combo drafting. Mm-hmm. It started in 2017 with that disastrous draft of Solomon Thomas over Mahomes and Watson, and then Reuben Foster at the end of round one, followed by Akella Witherspoon, C.J. Beathard, Joe Williams. It wasn't even the best Williams running back in that draft. From the state of Utah, they took Joe Williams. I saw him across the board at the time.
Who's the best state of Utah Williams running back?
Well, it was Jamal Williams.
Oh.
And you know, I saw it come across the board, and I'm like, ah, Jay Williams. Oh, the Niners got Jamal Williams from BYU. I really like that kid. I'd interviewed him before the draft. I'm like, hey, Jamal Williams, that's not bad. And then all of a sudden I'm here. Oh, no, it's Joe Williams. I'm like, what? But they got Kittle in that draft, and they did get DJ Jones, and that's kind of saved that whole draft. But that was a bad draft. Okay, so then that's 2017. 2018, they reach for McGlinchey at 9 overall. He's a right tackle. And then they go Dante Pettis in round 2, bust. But they did find Fred Warner in the third round.
By the way, draft McGlinchey ahead of Colton Miller.
What's that?
Colton Miller goes after McGlinchey, I think has to be mentioned.
Yeah. Bad draft, though. Another bad draft. Tarvarius Moore, Kentavious Street, DJ Reed got out of there. Marcel Harris, Julian Taylor, Richie James. I mean, what did you get? You got Fred Warner. Good player, but that's basically your entire draft. That was 2018.
Right.
2019 was their best draft, right? They had Bosa and Debo, 1-2. Then they missed on Jalen Hurd in the third round, but they got Wisnowski. They got Greenlaw in the fifth round. So that wasn't bad. That's a pretty good draft. Bosa, Debo, Greenlaw, Wisnowski. You got four starters, some Pro Bowl caliber players. Then 2020, they make the Buckner trade. They draft Kinlaw. That wasn't a good pick, but they did get Ayuk at 25. They took Colton McKivitz, Charlie Warner, and they got Juwan Jennings in the seventh round. So even though they only had five picks and they missed on the first, you know, it wasn't horrible. Then
Charlie Warner played 65 games. I mean, he played every game basically for 4 years for a six-round pick. That's pretty good.
That's not bad. Then the 2021 draft is also kind of a circus because they traded up for Trey Lance. Trey Lance became a bust. They did get Aaron Banks out of it. They did get Ambry Thomas out of it. They did get Demo Lenore and Afonga and Elijah Mitchell all on day three with Jalen Moore. So that's actually even though Lance was a whiff and Trey Sermon was a third round whiff, they did okay in the rest of that draft. I mean, that's a pretty good rest of the draft. They just whiffed on Lance. And then there's 2022. They have Drake Jackson, to this point a bust. TDP, no longer with them. Danny Gray, this point a bust. Spencer Burford, I don't know what you'd say about him. Womack, I like. They got Nick Sakel. But then, of course, what saves this draft is they got Brock Purdy in the seventh round. So bad draft, but Purdy in the seventh is pretty good.
Yeah. Burford's I mean, if you said in this draft, the Niners are going to get in the fourth round an offensive lineman that plays basically every game for the next 2 years, you'd be like, oh, probably solid. And I'm like, well, but he only plays like half of every game. Like, oh, that's weird. So,
and then this last year,
just what I would say about Spencer Burford is like really has served a purpose, but also should not be just anchored at that position. You should be trying to upgrade him as well, or he upgrades himself, but not bad.
He's had a little bit of an inconsistent, football card. I mean, he was good as a rookie. He wasn't as good as a second year player. We'll see what he is as a third year player.
Yeah. Yeah. TBD.
And then this last year, Jair Brown, in the third round. They didn't pick till the third round. But they got Jair Brown. They got Jake Moody, Cam Latu, Darrell Luter, Robert Beal, D. Winters, Braden Willis, Ronnie Bell, Jalen Graham. There's some players in there. I like Jalen Graham. I like Luter. Moody's your kicker. Jair Brown's a pretty damn good safety, whether, you know, what position he settles in on, strong or free, we'll see. But, I mean, decent draft, but overall, what would you
think? So Larry, yeah. I think the 23 draft, it could go either way right now, but if we did kind of trend arrows on every one of the players in that draft, like it's not like two are trending up, Moody and Brown, Jair, Latu's not, Luter, everyone talks about it, but we'll see. Beal, again, it's early. Like, these are fifth. Half of this draft is day three. More than half of this draft is day three, right? one, two, three, four, five, six, seven. Seven of the 10 guys, 70% of this draft is Saturday. So it's unfair to them. Like Ronnie Bell, that's a fan. It's been a really good seventh round pick so far for what a seventh round pick is. If a seventh round pick might be one of your top four or five receivers, that's fine. But it's trending towards two starters out of that draft, which, okay.
Should the Niner fans have confidence in Lynch and their drafting? I mean, we don't know how much of that was Adam Peters, how much of that was Lynch, how much of that was Shanahan, how much of that was Rand Carthon, how much of that was, you know, Tariq Ahmad or any of their scouts or whatever. We don't know. We don't know who's banging the table for who. Was it coaches involved? You know, Steve Wilks, when you watch the video of this last draft, seemed to be really hyped for some of their picks. Like he maybe had a big say in some of the selections. I don't know though that for sure, but I mean, how do you feel about the Niners' ability to draft? If you just take their first two picks, let's say, in every draft, Solomon Thomas, Reuben Foster, Mike McGlinchey, Dante Pettis, Nick Bosa, Deebo Samuel, Javon Kinlaw, Brandon Ayuk, Trey Lance, Aaron Banks, Drake Jackson, Ty Davis Price, Jair Brown, Jake Moody. Do you see what I'm saying there? It's like you got Brown and you got Banks and you got Ayuk, you got Bosa and Deebo, and that's it. You got five. You know, it's one, two, three, four, five, six, seven drafts. And in the first two picks, you've got five good players. And you had 14 picks in those seven drafts in the first two. I don't know. It seems like if they're going to be competitive with these Lions and Packers and all the best teams in the NFC and the teams that are getting better, their hit rate has got to be dialed up a little bit better than what it's been. Well, is that being too critical, or do you think that's
no? I don't think that's critical. I do have confidence in them, but I don't think that's too critical. I also think if we look at like some of those names you just mentioned that didn't work, right? Drake Jackson, Trey Lance, Javon Kinlaw, those three stand out to me as guys who are projected, and Drake, there's still time for him, but you know, he was kind of a let's take a shot on a projection in the second round. It almost feels on a few of these guys. Well, actually, what I was about to say probably wasn't fair, but yeah, like it makes you wonder, should they emphasize college productivity with their first pick this year? That's my kind of snap judgment reaction. Should it be an emphasis on college productivity? And if you're saying that none of these offensive linemen at 31 are going to plug and play, so you're talking about development, don't love that then, right? Like if they're drafting an offensive lineman at 31, like I want that guy to play. Like I want them to think he's good enough to play now because they need their offensive line to be better. If it's not going to make their offensive line better this year, go somewhere else. Make your team better this year with that first pick. That's because I think that offensive line draft thing I gave you earlier, looking at it yesterday, one of my conclusions was the way you're going to replace Trent Williams is probably just with a real, you might have to spend a ton of money to replace Trent Williams or a ton of draft capital to replace Trent Williams. You may not be replacing him with the 31st pick in the draft or a second or a third round pick, right? That's a hard ask. So maybe that's not what you're trying to do here. You're just trying to plug in a guy that can play. And you'll worry about replacing Trent later, as opposed to let's get a guy, develop him. Maybe he can become Trent. Like that might be too small of a target that you're trying to hit. So that's my take. That's like going through it. My first reaction is maybe you need to emphasize college productivity early. Now, part of this too, right, is like it's tough. All these picks are not equal. Jair Brown was a third rounder. Drake Jackson was 61, like the end of the second round. So they've, you know, sometimes their first picks they're not top 15 picks. The one that was Kinlaw and McGlinchey. And, you know, Kinlaw was a miss. McGlinchey was a starter on a, you know, Super Bowl team, but not what you would have wanted. So all that said, they do find good players. They do. They've consistently found good players. Just not in the spots necessarily where you think they will.
Interesting report I'm just seeing now on Niners Nation. It says the 49ers had interest in former Bengals free agent wide receiver Tyler Boyd. And he says, potential, but this is a Kyle Posey article, potential backup plan for Juwan Jennings, ? What do you think of Tyler Boyd? Now, he hasn't signed yet, from what I can tell. Does that give you any indication if, you know, there's teams that are interested? He's still a free agent. According to Kyle Posey, he could still be a valuable addition to the Niners. He would serve as a reliable plan B if Juwan Jennings were to sign an offer sheet elsewhere. While it's uncertain if the two could coexist in this offense, as both players excel in the slot, Boyd's potential signing offers a reassuring backup plan for the team. We kind of hit on this before, that the crop of free agent wide receivers that's still available here in early April is kind of an impressive group. What do you think? Tyler Boyd, in a lot of ways, always kind of hung in the background behind Ja'Marr Chase and T. Higgins, but man, when the game started, he was always really, really valuable. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's like nobody talks Tyler Boyd until all of a sudden it's game day and it's like, you got to cover this guy. I would be all about that. If they could get a Tyler Boyd to, and now I don't know that he complements the rest of the receiving core, but it does make you think if they went for a Tyler Boyd, or I guess I'll ask you, what do you think when you hear the Niners have or had interest in Tyler Boyd? Does that make you think that there's going to be a receiver trade, that they're preparing for, some kind of Juwan Jennings departure? Or is that just, hey, you know what, damn good receiver out there who, with good ball skills, get him and stack him and give yourself more options going into the draft?
I don't know. It feels like due diligence, meaning in case Juwan is gone, in case somebody offers us something for Ayuk, let's get an idea of what's out there and what it would cost. But to me, I wouldn't sign a contingency plan and then get stuck with that contingency plan when you don't need it financially. Doesn't make a ton of sense to me. You know what I mean? Like, if you were preparing for what if Juwan leaves, well, then there's enough receivers out there that you can just wait till Juwan's gone, right? He's not leaving. So it feels like due diligence to me. I mean, you know, this is a team that also likes to add players during the year. So you get a chance to meet with a guy. Maybe he comes up, somebody gets hurt. What's our list look like in October? You know, I do think teams do that, right? So it feels like due diligence. I don't quite see where he fits in. And to me, like, he would be a weird. He had 91 targets last year.
That's a lot.
He had 67 catch. Why would he come to the 49ers? Like, it doesn't make any sense for him. Like, you're going to go
seems
from
like
targets
only
to like
way
20.
He's the only way he's a Niner, right, is if they're moving off of one of their top three guys.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, they're not, they wouldn't. Could you see a scenario where they signed him and didn't move off of their top three guys?
I don't think so. Why would he do that?
Unless he felt like the Niners were some uniquely positioned team to win the Super Bowl.
Brandon Allen's like, bro, you got to come. Yeah, I mean, sure.
Oh, yeah, maybe. Maybe the Brandon Allen factor.
I guess, but it seems like a weird thing.
It does.
It seems like he'd be worth more money to somebody else is the point.
Totally. Last one. Colin Cowherd. Do you watch a lot of Cowherd?
Yeah.
You probably know him, huh? You probably are friends with him.
I've met him over the years, yeah.
So Cowherd did this whole soliloquy the other day, and sometimes I'm like, man, this guy's great. And then other times I'm like, this guy sucks. You know, as far as super into his point. The point that he was making the other day, I don't know if you saw this, but his point is that once the Niners sign Brock Purdy to that big money extension, he's making $1 million or $2 million now. I guess, with the adjustment in the cap, that little stipend he got the other day, doubled his salary stipend, 700 something grand. But he basically, his point is that once the Niners sign him, that the Niners will become the Cowboys, that they won't be able to compete, that they'll have so much money tied up, like the Cowboys have tied up in Dak. They'll have all this money tied up in a quarterback that's good, but can't really get him over the top. They'll have to, you know what I mean? They'll have to some, they'll be a competitor, but they'll be like on the outside. They'll be a team that makes the playoffs, but they'll be a team that's not really a Super Bowl title contender. What do you think? What do you think? Is he onto something there, or is he missing something am I missing something?
Well,
go ahead.
Yeah. I mean, first of all, as always, creative take, like just if we're grading the take, good take, right. He's got the Niners, he's got Brock, he's got the Cowboys. That is a money take right there. And I understand the logic. I do think there's logic to it. But what I would say to Colin is, I don't think the primary flaw for the Cowboys has been that their quarterback's not good enough. I think the primary flaw for the Cowboys has been that their coach is not good enough. Mm. Like, to me, Dak with Kyle Shanahan's a much better player. Like, or at least performs better. There's no question that Dak is overpaid, but I don't think his coach is getting the most out of him. And for a good period of time, when you watch the Cowboys, like, they have had skilled player talent and good defenses. I think their flaw has been their head coach. So I'm also not convinced yet. We'll see. But the Niners are going to have some leverage, and the 49ers might treat negotiations with Brock more smartly than the Cowboys did with Dak. I think the Cowboys were enamored with the idea of having another one of America's star quarterbacks in Dak. And he's a lovable guy. But I'm not convinced that when Brock signs his contract, it'll be the biggest contract for 10 minutes in the NFL for a quarterback.
You think it's going to be like a step or two beneath that?
We'll see. Here's the beauty. We get to play this year out and see what Brock does. We have this year, and the Niners will have the leverage on the following year on a player who's made so little money relative to what they could offer him in like the middle of tier one QB money. So I think the primary difference, to summarize my counterpoint, the primary difference is the coach. And I think Kyle's a better coach than Mike McCarthy, I think by a wide margin.
Go ahead.
No, that's it. So anyway, the point is, like, I think he is getting at a very interesting, the interesting question that's got debated last year and will be debated again this year and will be debated again for years and years, unless the 49ers win a Super Bowl soon, which is Brock really the kind of guy that deserves the top of the quarterback market money? Is he really a guy that elevates the players around him, or is he just running an offense more efficiently than most people can, but lacks the ceiling to carry a team? We'll see. I don't know the answer to that yet. I think to act as though we know that he's a carrier, I don't think that's correct. I don't think we know that he's a carrier. I think he's got to do it more. And I think he's got to do it with a lot on the line. I don't think he has to do it with less, but he has to do it more times. For me to believe that, like, okay, you pay him whatever the top of the market is, and he'll take your $7 million receiver, and he's gonna get that guy 70 balls. We'll see. The jury. I am pro Brock. I am pro Brock. The hazards of doing a show like this. I am pro Brock. I like him. I like him even when you remove the money, but. The jury, it's not over and done yet. Like, Dak, we've known what he is, right? With Brock, we're not exactly sure yet exactly where that ceiling is. So, that's what this year is going to be about, but it's possible. I don't think I don't think what he says is crazy. You pay the wrong quarterback, you can't win a championship. I mean, that's true, but the 49ers have a better coach than Dallas.
And I think the 49ers also have a better organization. I think Dallas is, you know, run a lot by Jerry and his kid. They listen to their scouts, but they don't listen all the time to their scouts. And so I think their draft record is kind of hit and miss. But as we stated before, the Niner draft record is a little bit of hit and miss. All right, man. Good stream. The last question on the way out the door. I said the last one was the last one, but this is the last one. Is there just non-Niner? I always like to finish with one non-Niner question. In the next 3 weeks, we are going to hear all kinds of dialogue about the top of this draft and the quarterbacks. Mm-hmm. We're already hearing about it. Caleb Williams, Drake May, J.J. McCarthy, Jaden Daniels, Bo Nix, Michael Penix, Spencer Rattler, Michael Pratt, Joe Milton III. I mean, there's, you know, Sam Hartman. I mean, there's always a lot of talk about quarterbacks. If you could have one quarterback out of this quarterback class, who do you want?
Caleb.
You believe in Caleb?
Yeah, I mean, I think he has been without peer when compared to these other guys. I don't think these other guys are in his category. I also like Michael Penix. I like those.
That's
two
my
guys.
Guy. My guy's Penix. I'm going with Penix. I like Penix, but you know, he ran the sub 4.5, sub 4.4. I mean, he guy ran fast and got a huge arm. And he was great this year for Washington. I saw that game against Utah. He just made play after play after play. It seemed like he just kept putting the ball in tight windows from odd trajectories. I will say
that,
this.
That was as great. I mean, it was great. But that was like everything worked that day.
Yeah. I mean, also, there's something really weird about Penix, though, that makes me uncomfortable in that he seems like he throws from odd trajectories for no reason at all. You know what I mean? It's one thing if, like, hey, man, that you were being rushed off your left. You had this linebacker coming off the corner and, you know, you change your arm. He sometimes just looks like he just kind of lowers his arm angle and just kind of shoots it out there for without proper mechanics for no reason at all.
Yeah, he doesn't use his lower half.
Yeah, he's right. Really an arm hand freaking monster. But the arm speed, the ball speed, the playmaking ability, he's a different thrower of the football. And yeah, I think you saw it in Indy.
Would you have the guts to take him first, Larry?
No. But I'll say this. I definitely, if you said to me how many quarterbacks are going in the first round, I don't think there's any doubt. Caleb, Drake, McCarthy, Daniels, Nix, Penix. I think all six go in the first round.
Yeah. Yeah. I do.
Do you like Nix more than Penix?
No.
Or you like Penix more?
I like Penix more.
You do?
Yeah. But Nix is more athletic. Nix is a more durable player. Like Penix, you know, came as a beat up player to UW and never had an injury really like he did at Indiana. He had multiple ACLs. He had a shoulder injury by the time he got to Washington. But he did get beat up in games, you know, like multiple games would end with him just like doubled over. Happened multiple times at the end of the year. So, you know, it's not a durability question. I do wonder, like, is it because he's sneaky athletic, but he got peppered behind a good offensive line. He got hit a few times. You're like, God, that he is in pain. That's a painful position, so maybe it means nothing. Like, he held up. He didn't break a rib. He didn't bust a shoulder. He didn't tear an ACL again or whatever. But and maybe I'm looking at it. Maybe the way to look at it is the flip side. Like, he took big hits and kept playing and played well, that sort of thing.
Were you a Jaden Daniels man at ASU back in the day?
I was, yeah.
So you're not surprised that he went to LSU and lit it up?
I was a little surprised in the sense that it kind of felt like I had already been proven wrong at Arizona State. Like, oh, I guess he's not as good as I thought. So I'd kind of give it up. I had sold my stock. I'm like, well, all right, I guess I'll sell my stock. And then he, you know, I'm like the guy that sold Bitcoin at 5,000. It's like, well, I don't get to claim that I knew it was going to be 6,270, you know?
That's right. Bitcoin. All right, guy. Good stuff, man. What do you got cooking the rest of your day? You know, I thought you got through the stream with the the voice still you know healing up. I thought it went smooth. But what do you got cooking the rest of the day?
Well, the question is not if I'm going to get through the show. It's whether the people listening to this will be able to get through it. That's the question. So I got to get a few things to my tax guy. And I got to maybe go to the I'm going to play Wente tomorrow, golf course in Livermore. It's supposed to be nice, like a vineyard.
My buddy Townie's, you know Townie well.
Yeah, of course.
Townie's buddy is the starter out there.
The starter, what's his name? Yeah. Do you remember?
I forget his first name. Gosh, okay. I forget his name. But he's the starter out there, so mention Townie. But also, I'll tell you, Wente, I like the layout. Yeah. You're going to get a lot of sun. There's not a lot of shade on that course. It's a sunny course. It's out in the middle of, you know, no trees. It doesn't seem like a lot of trees.
I need some sun. Huberman tells me I need some sun.
But yeah, I mean, I like that course. I even like some of their wines. I'll buy their wines. At, you know, I mean, certain bottles. Yeah.
I don't know about anything about wine.
I don't know anything about wine either, but I know what I like. I like kind of a smooth red. I'm not a white wine drinker. I can't drink white wine. I don't like chilled wine, but I like a nice red wine, like a nice Merlot or Cabernet or a certain select Pinot Noirs. There you go. Anything you want to promote? You got anything coming up on, that you're doing besides your golf at Wente? Everybody get out to Wente provide a gallery.
Hit
for
that
guy.
Like button on my round of golf tomorrow. I think I'm going to do some Lombardi and I are going to do a show Thursday.
Nice.
Thursday morning. So tune in for that. Yeah.
Good stuff. Thanks to Pig and a Pickle for being the title sponsor of the Krug Show. Thanks to Guy. Thanks to all you guys and have a great Tuesday. Enjoy the day. Peace.
Never met a man I've been scared of. Careful, you won't get exactly what you asked for. Careful.
Save big money on your outdoor project now at Menards. We have everything you need to keep your outdoor power equipment running smooth so you can keep that lawn in tip-top shape or enjoy some time on your boat. Right now, all FVP, lawn and garden, and marine batteries are on sale through May 5th. Check out our entire selection of FVP batteries today. And view our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals.
Save big money at Menards.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.